Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, a podcast about Saturday Night Live. I'm one of your hosts, John Trumbull.
And I'm the other one of your hosts, Darren Patterson.
It's another skip week for SNL. They're coming back on November 3rd.
Yes.
With
Jonah Hill
and Maggie Rogers next week.
Huge fan.
But this week, skip week for SNL, yeah. We are going to do another theme week.
Yes.
And you know what? You know what's exciting?
What's exciting?
This is our fifth episode.
Ooh.
You know what that means?
What does that mean?
We're in the Five Timers Club.
Ooh, Five Timers Club.
One, two, three, four, five. You're great.
You're great. We're wearing the robes right now.
Yeah,
you can't
we're
see
wearing
it.
The robes with our little five patches, and it's been a hell of a run, hasn't it?
It has. Oh, my God. Remember? Oof, God.
Yeah.
Like, memories.
We thought about making this just a best of clip show. Of all the highlights of our previous four episodes.
Yeah, oh my God.
But no, we're going to barrel through. We're going to do more new content
of
us looking back at old SNL content.
Yes, because we care about you, the listener.
Yes, and last week we went through our favorite cast members.
Right.
And we came up with a definitive list of great SNL cast members.
That's right. It's set in stone, people.
Set in stone.
That's right.
Anyone who is not on that list, we hate them.
With a fiery passion.
Yeah. Fuck you, other cast members.
Yeah. Burn in Hades.
Yeah. But
wow, that was rough, huh? As soon as I said, I was like, oh, that's mean.
We went really hardcore.
Yeah, wow.
This week we're going to talk about our favorite sketches through the years, and we're going to do pretty much the same format. We each came up with a list of five, of our favorites, and a few honorable mentions, and we're going to go back and forth, and we're going to talk about those sketches.
Right.
And who knows, maybe in a couple cases, one of us will bring up a sketch the other one doesn't remember.
This is going to be interesting, yeah.
So, who knows? I mean, we can draw it from any time in the SNL.
Any time, any
44-year history.
There's got to be a couple that we at least like.
There might be some overlap, yeah.
There's less of a chance of overlap on this one, just because it's...
Probably, just the sheer number of sketches.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's... Hundreds. It's probably well over 1,000 sketches.
Thousands and thousands of sketches. Oof.
So
I can't wait. All right. So, why
don't you start, Darren? Ooh, I started last week.
Let's start us off. All right. Well, I mean, if you listen to last week's episode, I've mentioned a couple already off the top, and one of those sketches that I loved very much, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
I think
it was a hilarious parody. As I said before, I'm a huge Eddie Murphy fan, and I thought this was one of the funniest sketches I've ever heard Eddie Murphy be in, or it's one of the most memorable ones I remember.
Yeah.
Just coming down the stairs and acting as if Mr. Rogers was in the hood.
Yeah,
as the
and it's
say.
Such a simple concept. I mean, it's just a Mr. Rogers show, but he's in the ghetto.
Yeah,
and he's
a
down on his luck, sort of shady guy.
Exactly. Like I forget how the song, but the opening song where he was kind of like. I married a woman who said she was rich, stole all her money, walked out on the bitch. Would you be mine? Could you? Like something like that just made a young Darren Patterson laugh hysterically. And as I said before, when he went, somebody was knocking on his front door, and he said, this is how we answer the door in my neighborhood. Who is it? It's the way he said it. Who is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just funny. And it was also... he did this character a couple times, but there was one time where Mr. T was at the door knocking.
I don't remember this.
Yeah,
one.
It was an episode where he was banging on. He had a drum set, and he was just kind of banging on the drums.
Okay.
And then the big next door neighbor was like, "Robinson, turn down that, knock off that racket." And then he said, "Oh, don't worry, boys and girls, I have a lock on my door. He won't get in." And then just Mr. T just smashes the door in.
Wow.
And comes in and just chokes him out.
I don't remember this one. I'm going to have to look this one up.
And then they say, and then Mr. T has Eddie Murphy's, he has his hands around his neck, and it's like, "Oh, good morning, boys and girls. Today's word, it's pain."
I can just hear Mr. T saying that now.
Yeah, I'm
surprised I missed that, because in the early 80s, I was all about Mr. T.
Really?
I love Mr. T. I'm a huge A-Team fan.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I must not have caught his episode of SNL.
Remember when Mr. T had Mr. T cereal for a while?
Yeah, I remember he also had a Saturday morning cartoon.
He had a Saturday morning
where
cartoon
where he was leading
show.
A team of gymnasts around the country. They were traveling around in the bus, and there was a little kid who dressed up like Mr. T, and there was a bulldog who had a mohawk like Mr. T.
I don't know how, the more I think about it, I was like, dogs don't have hair like that. I mean, they do. I guess you could carve a mohawk in a dog's head, but it was like a bulldog or something like that,
right? Yeah.
Bulldogs don't really have mohawks, but
maybe it was like plugs.
Oh.
I don't know. Can you give a dog hair plugs? I don't know. That's an interesting scientific question.
Plugs on a pug.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Wordplay.
Mm.
Things that make you go, hmm. But yeah, and you know, Mr. T cereal, as you know, was displayed in Pee-wee's Big Adventure and whatnot.
Because he was huge.
He was a huge star, and he was like, and he was like, it was weird. He had like, he was an okay actor, but he, somehow he was able to.
How dare you, sir?
All right, look, I'm sorry.
He was an amazing actor.
I will give you Clubber Lang. He was amazing in Clubber Lang. I will give you that.
He was an amazing B.A. Baraka. Such range.
He was the really mean
black guy who fought Rocky, yeah. And then he was the slightly nicer black guy who fought bad guys on the A-team. Yeah.
And he also drove the van.
He drove the van, and he was also a mechanical wizard.
Yeah.
And, I mean, don't get me started on the A-team and B.A. Baracus.
And he was also the angry man who drove a cab in DC Cab. All right, you know what? Now that I say it out loud, he did have...
Right.
He was a better actor than I
And he went apple-picking with Conan O'Brien.
He did? Wait, like recently?
Well, this was like a famous sketch that Conan did in like the 90s where he went apple picking with Mr. T.
I don't remember that at all.
Okay. Well, we both have Mr. T sketches to Google now.
We do.
I'm going to find the Mr. Robinson's episode. You're going to find apple picking with Conan O'Brien.
We may have to do a Mr. T
episode. And we'll do a special Mr. T episode our next skip week.
We went off on a whole Mr. T tangent.
Wow.
Sometimes we start at one spot and we just go.
Yeah. People. Well, we talked about Eddie a lot last episode.
Yeah,
so
I'm a diehard devotee.
What else is there to say about Eddie? He was great.
Eddie Murphy was great. I mean, Velvet Jones. We didn't even mention Velvet Jones.
How to Be a Ho.
How to Be a Ho. Be somebody. Be a ho.
Did we mention Buckwheat?
I think we touched on it, but like I should have mentioned more about Buckwheat just because of that Buckwheat Sing sketch.
Yeah.
I mean, Bob
45.
And there was that one song at the end where it was just question marks that they don't even know what he's trying to say.
But I can recognize that song.
That's Betty Davis Eyes, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can recognize the tune.
Like, that's totally Betty Davis Eyes.
If you've ever wondered what the song is, it is 100% Betty Davis Eyes.
By Kim Carnes. Look at that. Amazing song.
Yes. All right.
Ooh, wow. So, where did we go?
Wow.
We went to the highest of highs on that
coming
one.
Coming in hot.
Yeah. All right. So, one of your favorite sketches.
One of my favorite sketches. This is a sketch I think was an instant classic. I loved it from the very first time I saw it.
Gotcha.
And I can identify the sketch with just one word. Okay. Cowbell.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I could have used a little more cowbell. I mean, Christopher Walken, as a record producer, we have Blue Oyster Cult recording Don't Fear the Reaper. And,
oh, my God.
I mean, and Christopher Walken is big-time record producer Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah.
Who he's listening to take, and he just says, I could have used a little more cowbell. And
it's, really explore the space.
Explore the space. And Will Ferrell is the Gene Frenkel, the cowbell player in Blue Oyster Cult. Right. And he gets more and more animated, and he starts pissing off his bandmates. Yeah.
It's like, hey, man.
And he's wearing a shirt that's too small for him, and it keeps hiking up.
That helps.
Will Ferrell's gut is just, like, spilling out.
Right.
And
I mean, Will Ferrell was kind of known for that, too. Like, there was a couple of scenes where he knew he was, like, a big dude, so he looked funnier in, like, smaller clothes.
Yeah.
I remember there's one sketch where he was wearing, like a Speedo with an American flag on it.
Right. Like, it was like a post 9/11.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly. And like, I think he just knows his body is kind of funny looking. So like, he'll wear like tighter stuff.
He's just like a very average build guy. And he's not tall though.
Isn't he?
He is a tall guy. But he's not like a cut guy.
Right.
And you know, I guess he's sort of average to middling shape. You know,
he's got the dad bod.
He's got a dad bod.
Yeah,
he's got that gut that spills out, and he's not afraid to show it off for comedic effect.
show off the goods.
And I just love that sketch. It's just such a stupid, simple idea.
I got a fever. And the only prescription.
And that's a sketch that would not work as well with somebody else in the Christopher Walken role.
Very much so.
I mean, because
yeah.
Walken is so quirky, he just lends that oddness to whatever he does, and it's just one of my favorites. It's always made me laugh. I've watched it over and over and over, and I just love it.
I think it's a sketch that works even if you're not very familiar with the song "Don't Fear the Reaper,"
right?
Blues, because like I feel like a lot of people aren't, because like a lot of people who I've seen who love that sketch are like, you know, younger people.
It was before their time.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it because like I love listening to, like, classic rock. I'm listening to, like, you know, the oldies a lot. So I knew the song, and I knew the reference they were making. Yeah, there's a cowbell in that song, and it is weird. Because, like, if you ever hear the song, you hear that cowbell, and it's like, that cowbell, why is that cowbell there? It's not really needed at all. It's not really adding anything. So mm-hmm. the fact that they knew that and made a whole sketch around that,
mm-hmm.
I thought was hilarious. I mean, it was a good sketch for people who are familiar with the song and know what they're referencing, but it's also a sketch that's funny on its own. Like,
yeah.
if you're not familiar with the song, you'd still get it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, like I said, I think it's an instant classic. I just loved it from the first moment. And it's one of those things that kind of caught on to the culture. You still see like people with t-shirts that say more cowbell.
Yeah. People reference it today.
If you say more cowbell, people instantly know what you're talking about. Even people who don't watch SNL, they get it.
I gotta have more cowbell. Really explore the space. I don't know why that sticks in my head, that line, but it's just like,
if Bruce Dickinson is asking us to put in more cowbell, I think we gotta put in more cowbell.
And there's even a part where, like, again, Fallon breaks at one point.
And that doesn't even ruin it.
Yeah. It's just, like, all right, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because I think also everybody, I mean, I think Chris Kattan broke a little bit, but I mean, like, Ferrell didn't break. And the fact that he didn't break and he's still, like, saying this ridiculous thing.
And Chris Parnell, he was, like, the lead singer, and he was really good, too. And
him
getting slowly pissed off. Like, he had more of a thankless part in that sketch, but he really did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, Parnell is one of those characters. He's like one of those underrated.
He's an underrated guy.
Yeah, we maybe should do an episode of that, like underrated characters.
Yeah, that's a thought for the future.
Cast members. Yeah.
All right. Think about so, that. What is next on your list
next
of sketches?
On my list, I think we mentioned it earlier on. Let's go to this one. All right, we'll do it. Matt Foley, motivational speaker.
Okay.
I was a huge fan of it. Like. It was one of those sketches, I think we talked about it on the earlier episode, where, he not even literally exploded, but he was just, like, the way he just kind of came in and just took over the scene. Talking about Chris Farley, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just insane. Like,
lives
just
in a van down by the river.
Yeah, he's a character who came with a catchphrase already, and he was just, like, funny looking. Yeah. I mean, like, visually, he's funny, and then the funniness, his voice was funny. Like, well, la-di freaking da!
Mm-hmm.
Got ourselves a writer here!
and you can see David Spade and Christina Applegate.
Right.
And he also said Christina Aguilera. Christina Aguilera was also breaking when she was watching the sketch at home.
Yeah, at home.
Christina Applegate, they're both cracking up.
Yeah. You can see, like, both of them just lose it. I mean, like, again, the great Phil Hartman was in his sketch, but he was kind of pulling back. He was more of the straight man. And like,
yeah, he was playing the dad.
Yeah, and, like, this whole sketch was just Chris Farley just kind of just...
Just going nuts, just going to town.
Full Farley.
Crashing through the coffee table. Did he crash through a wall at the end of that sketch?
No, he brought back the character a couple times. He did that, but on that one, he just crashed the table, and like that was enough for people to whoa.
Yeah, and people did not see that coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, boom.
Like, whoopsie daisy.
Yeah.
Because I think at that point, they hadn't done too much physical comedy on this show.
They go back and forth with it.
Yeah, because in the beginning, of course, it was physical with like Chevy Chase and whatnot, but then there was a time for a while that wasn't as physical.
Yeah.
And then I think when Farley came on, it became like, it brought back the more physical stuff.
Yeah, I think it just depends on what the cast members are good at or comfortable at. And there are some who are more adept at physical comedy than others.
Yeah, I know, like, and later on they brought it back, like when Molly Shannon was on it, and she
Mary Catherine Gallagher,
like her character was like crashing into everything.
Crashing into the folding chairs. And
yeah. But I mean, they don't, like now, I don't think they're much physical, but like those moments when they have physical comedy.
I can't think of anybody who throws himself around like those folks did. But no, I'm sure we'll get somebody before too long.
Here's hoping.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. So Matt Foley.
People crashing into things and falling over, it's pretty much always funny. It's funny in any language.
I mean, it's I won't say sad to say, but it's like, I mean, it's cliche, like, oh, people falling down, it's funny, and I'm sure they'll bring it back soon.
But it works.
Yeah.
So.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Okay. So who do you got there?
What do I got next? I have something from the first year of the show.
Ooh.
This was a classic sketch.
Going back.
For me. It was Star Trek, The Last Voyage of the Starship Enterprise.
Oh, shit.
Cast playing the crew from Star Trek. You got John Belushi as Captain Kirk. You got Chevy Chase as Mr. Spock. You got Dan Aykroyd as Bones McCoy.
Right.
And they encounter a Plymouth in space, and it turns out to be Elliot Gould as a network executive from NBC who announces to them that Star Trek has been canceled.
I thought that was amazing. The first time I saw it, it kind of blew my mind, the way they were, like, breaking the fourth wall, or, like, kind of breaking the facade that this is an actual thing. It's like, oh, no, it's a TV show.
And they gradually... one by one become more accepting of it.
Yeah, and like they all like kind of break character.
But Shatner just hangs on. And Belushi's Shatner is so amazing.
Again, like usually like Belushi's like more the big broad, but he kind of plays it down a little bit more.
He did play it down, but he still gets those Shatnerisms. He's like, but for how long, Mr. Fox? For how long? He gets that Shatnering... Shatnerian rhythm.
Shatnerian
rhythm.
Nice.
I still think that's one of the funniest things SNL has ever done.
And then as the sketch goes on, like Grant Morris is like breaking down the set. Yeah. Like all this stuff just comes apart so easily.
Can we sell this stuff to Lost in Space? And at the end of the sketch, the bridge set is half apart and the flats are turned around. And
I also like when Chevy Chase plays Spock, he kind of breaks down. It's like, oh, no one's watching the show, man.
I love the show. Everyone loves the show.
He tried to be Spock for him, but then he just breaks. It's like no one's watching this, and he breaks down in tears.
And Chevy Chase is really good in that sketch too. I mean, he doesn't.
We're giving Chase a compliment here.
Well, I mean, and Chase like sometimes can have a tendency to like try and steal focus or anything or stuff like that. But he doesn't do that in that sketch. He does what he's supposed to. He's a good Spock, and I mean, he underplays beautifully when they just like take off his pointed ears.
Yeah,
and just he has this dejected expression. Yeah, and he just face.
And then like there's a point where he's like kind of walking. He's like in the background walking and crying Belushi is giving like the final speech.
Yes,
and he's just like, oh man, no one's watching this show.
Spock, you're half human. Remember, Belushi's Kirk is so amazing. And this was like before a time when. Before when everybody and their brother were doing a Shatner impression.
Yeah, that's true.
Not too many people were imitating Shatner in the late 70s.
That's very true.
And I wonder
if most people's Shatner impression is based off Belushi's Shatner impression.
I feel he's like patient zero for Shatner impressions.
Like the way most people's Cosby impression is based off of Eddie Murphy's Cosby impression.
Yes, yeah. It's like the one person they sort of unlock, oh, this is how you do that celebrity.
Yeah.
And then everybody else. I mean, other people have taken the Shatner further, like Kevin Pollak or folks like that, but there's something about Belushi Shatner.
It's a good Shatner,
and you can tell that Belushi was a big fan of the show. You can tell that Michael O'Donoghue, who wrote the sketch, was a big fan of Star Trek.
No, absolutely,
and it really just comes through in the sketch.
Absolutely,
I love that one.
Wow, that's a great sketch. I totally forgot about that, but now I'm remembering it. Like, oh yeah, I used to watch that on the reruns, and I remember getting a real cool kick out of that.
We should also mention that was the birth of one of the all-time great SNL running gags. Whenever they do a Star Trek sketch, they have the same guy from the backstage crew play Mr. Sulu.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's I'm blanking on his name, but he's like a set designer or something, and he plays Mr. Sulu in that original 1975-76 sketch.
Uh-huh.
He did it again when Shatner hosted in the mid-80s.
Oh.
And they did the restaurant enterprise with Khan as the restaurant inspector.
Oh, wow. I totally forgot about that.
And then, like a few years ago when Chris Pine hosted, they had him again.
Really?
As Mr. Sulu.
The same guy?
Yes. Because he's been with the show all this time, and Saturday Night Live, I don't think, has ever had like an Asian male cast member.
I was about to say, that more speaks to SNL's hiring process.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. But, get the Asian guy we out of storage.
But so they have the crew guy play Mr. Sulu every damn time.
And wow, all right.
It's hilarious.
Guys, keep your eyes out open for that. I had no idea.
Obviously not an actor, but
but he is Asian.
But it's all the fun. But he's Asian, and really, isn't that all you really need?
Jeez. Wow. I'd like to apologize to all Asian listeners. Hoo boy.
Sorry about that, folks.
We'll let our editor clean that up.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll clean up in post.
So what's the next sketch?
Next sketch. Well, let's go back to my undying, unabashed love for Eddie Murphy and go with the White Like Me sketch.
Okay.
Where he plays dressed up as a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
So for those that don't know, it's basically it's like one of those video sketches or filmed sketches. Pre-film sketches where Eddie Murphy talks to camera. It's like, oh, you know, I have this idea, like, you know, see what white people are really like when we're not around. So he dresses up like a white guy Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, you can obviously tell it's Eddie Murphy, but in like really kind of poorly done white face, I guess you could say. But I mean, as the sketch goes on, he like does stuff like he buys a newspaper at a newsstand and he attempts to give the guy money.
The guy's like, "What? No, just take it. Take it."
it's like, and then I realize white people just give other people white things. Other people things.
Yeah, we do.
Exactly. And then as the sketch goes on, he's on a bus. Mm-hmm. And like, there's only one other black guy on the bus, and the black guy gets off the bus, and then the bus driver's like, "All right, he's gone." And then they start turning on music, party music, right.
and like, everybody's like high fiving each
other,
yeah,
and like pouring out drinks. And Eddie Murphy's like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
And then the very end of the sketch, it's he's at a bank wanting to get a loan, and he called himself like Mr. White is his name. And then he's meeting up with another bank employee who's a black guy, and it's like, "Well, you don't have any the proper paperwork you need for a loan. We just can't give you money." But then another bank employee who's a white guy walks by, saying, "Oh wait, you know, I got this, Mark. I'll take care of this customer." And then he talks to Eddie Murphy and white face. It's like, "Oh, that was a close one, right? We don't need any of the paperwork, do we, Mr. White?" And then Eddie Murphy goes, "What a silly Negro." And then the employee just gives Eddie Murphy all this money. Just take the money or pay us back or don't. We don't care. It was such a smart sketch. It's like a good...
And it's an edgy sketch for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's for the time, it was pretty edgy. And it's like a thing where... It's this thing like where I like that people doing sketches... another sketch show I'll mention, the Chappelle Show, where they're saying something, they're giving a message, but it's not preachy. Like, the comedy's coming first, and the message is coming second.
Right.
If you could watch the old Chappelle Show, I guess it's old at this point, well. But if you watch the Chappelle Show, you watch like something like the Racial Draft or, you know, the Blind Klansman or something. You know, any of those other sketches where Law and Order SVU sketch, Law and Order sketch they had, where it's like they have a message, they're saying something about it, but they're not being like a preachy thing. It's not like the first thing. It's not because like when you have a sketch and you're being preachy about it, it can tend to be like more serious or dour. But like SNL made a point to have the comedy come first, and then actually when you have the comedy come first, it makes what you're trying to say even more stronger and better.
Yeah. And I think if you're doing it in the context of a comedy sketch, like people are going to be more open to the ideas that you're trying to get across.
Yeah. Like you're giving them a message without them even knowing it.
Yeah. Like their shields aren't up.
Exactly. Like you're making fun of something and you're like kind of giving them a little medicine too. And I don't know. I still think of that sketch. To this day, I think of this sketch like, wow, that was a really great sketch. I really enjoyed it. So, yes, Eddie Murphy, white like me. I love Eddie Murphy. Thank you.
I think this wasn't next on my list, but I think this would be a good place to segue into it. This was a sketch from when Richard Pryor hosted.
Oh.
The job interview that he goes on with Chevy Chase. Oh. They play the word association.
Wait, this one of your top five? Or?
Yeah. I put this in there.
I was
waffling on what should be in my top five.
Okay.
But I thought of this and I was just like, you know, that's a pretty edgy sketch.
It is. Yeah. I mean, especially by today's standard, like there's no way this could get on it.
Yeah. Because I mean, they're doing word association and Chevy Chase's character, who's conducting the interview. He segues into racial slurs.
Right.
Okay.
Like if I say dog, you say tree. Yes, tree.
That's right.
I just thought that little part was funny.
And I can't really describe the climax.
You
of
really
the
can. There's a
if,
word.
If you recall it, maybe you can.
Yeah.
If you don't want to, I understand. But I mean,
we're feeling awkward just describing it.
Well, okay. I will put this as diplomatically as I can. At one point, Chevy Chase says the N-word.
Yeah.
And the word association thing. And
it's honky honky dead honky.
Yeah. I mean, and part of the funny thing
we can
is,
say honky. That's
yeah.
Okay.
That's okay. The funny thing is that Richard Pryor, he's trying to come back at him with other slurs for white people, and he quickly runs out because there just aren't that
there
many.
There aren't many.
I don't think we even had cracker yet.
I think we
point.
Did, didn't we?
I don't know.
I'm gonna have to.
I don't know. I wasn't tossing around too many racial slurs. And
I'll ask this at the next meeting.
Yeah.
But
okay.
I'm sure cracker was
around. And he at one point just says. N-word.
Yeah.
With it, just venom, and you just hear dead honky.
Yeah.
And
but the audience loved it, though. It's weird like back then something like that, the audience like really responded to well, but and, like now it'd be like
yeah. And ugh. And prior he really throws himself into it. He's like twitching his face.
Right.
And you know he's ready to go.
Yeah, and, exactly. And then Chevy Chase backs off. Like, all right, here, take the job. Don't hurt me.
Yeah, here you can have this job as a janitor.
Exactly. And also, I believe the sketch was written by Paul Mooney, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was.
So that kind of explains. Like, oh, okay, that now it makes more sense. That's
and,
why.
And apparently they did that because like Chevy Chase was really pushing to have a sketch with Richard Pryor.
Really?
That week, who was the host.
Oh, okay.
He was like, you know, I guess I want to do something with Pryor.
Hmm.
But
yeah, that's, I mean, that's just that sketch is one of the most memorable ones.
Cause I look at that and I think it's amazing. And I think, like, oh, it, you know, they would never do this today. And I'm sure. And, you know, whenever they rerun it, it's amazing to me that they rerun it. But,
yeah,
because you
well, I mean, think, they bleep it out now, right?
I don't think they do.
What?
I don't think they do. Because I think they're still airing it late.
Uh-huh.
And I think it might send a weird message if they, like, bleeped out a thing that they didn't bleep out 40-something years ago.
I feel like they would. Because the next time I heard the N-word on SNL was when Will Ferrell did that Robert Goulet thing, and he was singing, it was for a commercial for Robert Goulet sings hip-hop hits or something like that. Really? It came out like in the 90s, and okay. he was singing the thong song. It's like, okay. in Robert Goulet voice. It's like, right. Oh girl, you had that dress, it's so scandalous.
And he drops an N-bar?
He says it, well, with an A, but he says it, I think the last when they showed it, they let it go. But I think when they re-aired it, they bleeped it out. Like recently.
Yeah.
Or like when he was singing Big Papa, and he.
I feel like, I may be wrong on this, but I feel like when I've watched re-airings of that Chevy Chase, Richard Pryor sketch, they don't bleep out the word.
Hmm.
And honestly, right. I don't think the sketch would work as well if they did bleep it out. I mean, I think
interesting. That's interesting. Right. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Yeah. Like, I've seen old episodes of, like, The Jeffersons where they say the N-word and they leave it in sometimes. Like, there was a couple times where, there was one time where, now we're talking about The Jeffersons.
Yeah.
But there's one where George had bought, like, a really expensive watch, and he showed it to his son, Lionel. And it's like, oh, yeah, this watch cost me such and such money. And then Louise was like, you spent that much for a watch? It's like, N-word, please. But she says the N-word.
Wow.
You can see that on YouTube, but, like, they let the N-word go. But it was hilarious then.
Norman Lear, man.
Oh, Norman Lear.
He was edgy.
He was. You think he's this kindly old man, but dude was...
No, he was out there.
Pushing envelopes. Wow. What were we talking about?
Anyway, we were talking about racial slurs.
Yeah. So, as we are wont to do.
So, wow, I had no idea about that Robert Goulet sketch.
If you can find it, it's called like, I forget what it's called. It's something. It's like Robert Goulet. He's like in a car in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, I don't think I want to do that Google search.
Maybe. don't write that when you scoot. Just put Robert Goulet commercial. Don't write an N-bomb. You'll have to cop that.
I'll be put on a list somewhere.
Yeah.
So,
oh boy.
So yeah, what's
wow?
What's
all right, yeah.
Sketch for you.
All right. So the next one, it's not a famous sketch, but it's honestly one of my favorite sketches. It's a personal favorite. It's when Tom Hanks hosted the Sabra Price is Right. I don't know.
Oh,
wow. Do you remember that one?
I think so. Was that the you me go disco?
Yes.
Okay.
It's one of those sketches. Like me and one of my best friends. Like it's one of those things. Where not a lot of people remember it, but me and my friends remember it, and like we still quote it to this day. For those that don't know, it's basically like, it's like Price is Right, but it's with like Middle Eastern people kind of running the show, and then like they say, oh, hey, how much for this TV? But then you say how much it is, but then they get insulted when you say your guess.
Right.
And then, like, you're basically haggling with them for the TV.
Right.
And they're like, wait, I thought this was a TV show. Like, oh, no, this is how much you pay. Now you talk to my wife. Like, it's one of those sketches where, like, if you've ever done that or haggled with people, like, you know, in the city at, like, an electronics store or something like that, you get it. But it's one of the, I don't know, it's one of those sketches I thought was, like, hilarious.
Wow.
It's
a deep cut there.
It's a deep cut. I will admit, it's a deep cut, but it's one of those sketches, like, where me and my friends just loved it a lot. Like, especially with Tom Hanks, he's, like, I don't know, Tom Hanks is one of the Maybe one of the greatest hosts they've had.
He's one of the great hosts. I mean, he's somebody who's always there, and he always like throws himself into whatever they give him, and he's game to do most anything.
I mean, he's one of those hosts where, like, because he's done so many dramas, mm-hmm. you forget that he has like really sharp comedic chops too.
Well, I mean, he started as a comedic actor, and then he kind of segued into the dramatic.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, stuff. But I mean, I feel like, especially if you're younger, you don't even know that. Like, true. The same way you don't know, if you're, depending on your age, you don't know that Eddie Murphy was this awesome stand-up comedian.
Uh-huh.
You just kind of know him. Oh, yeah, that's Tom Hanks. He's like the drama actor.
Mm-hmm.
But like,
Philadelphia, yeah, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, it's Captain Phillips. But right. like, you see him do comedy, and it's like, whoa, this guy's really funny, too. Mm-hmm. He's like, he's got chops like that. And then the Sabra Price Is Right sketch, which I love the way they say, oh, you talk to, like, and they say things like, oh, he's a CD player, very good. Mm-hmm. And it's like some cheap CD player, and then mm-hmm. they haggle for money.
The main thing I remember from that is just them hitting on the female contestants and being that like, too. You, yeah. me, go disco, you, me, go disco.
We go to disco, it's good.
Yeah.
And of course, if you haven't seen the sketch, a lot of stuff that was in that sketch, they added into the Adam Sandler movie, You Don't Mess With the Zohan.
Oh, yes, yes.
You, like, you know, we go to disco, yes. good. And I don't know, it's one of my favorite sketches. Mm-hmm. I get a kick out of it. I do.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. let's see. Next, I'm up now. Next, I would say, this is something I think we mentioned in passing last episode, talking about favorite cast members.
Yeah.
It was a Chris Farley sketch, the Chippendales auditions.
Oh, yeah.
This was, the host was Mr. Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
At the height of his Patrick Swayze-ness.
Swayze-dom.
You know, he's got this big thing of hair, this big
bouffant,
half mullet. I don't know. A big helmet of hair.
It's a mane.
It's like a mane of hair. He's
gorgeous.
He's like
mane.
A lion. And
I mean,
and,
my God.
Yeah. And he and Chris Farley are auditioning for the same slot on the Chippendales team, the male stripper team. And they're
Adrian and Barney.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You're
Adrian,
names.
Barney.
Nice. Yeah. And they're having a dance off. And you've got Kevin Nealon, Mike Myers, and Jan Hooks, and they're the judging committee,
right.
And they're all looking at this very solemnly, very seriously, and they're dancing to Loverboy's "Everybody's Working for the Weekend."
Damn straight they are.
And you know, Patrick Swayze, of course, has some great dance moves, but and the joke is, Kevin Farley, Chris Farley.
Whoa.
Chris Farley. Sorry.
Don't cross Farleys, man.
I've been seeing so many advertisements for Kevin Farley on Facebook lately.
Have you?
Yeah, he's playing at some place in the city or somewhere in Jersey. And
got Farley on the brain.
I know. So Chris Farley, and he's also doing his dance moves, but he's an obese guy.
Yeah, he's not.
And it's funny just to see, you know, a big guy like that just doing the dance moves.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny that, like, you know, you see Schwade, who's like who's ripped and yoked,
cut,
and
he's got the
just,
dancer's body.
Yeah, and you and like the
he looks Farley, like a Chippendales
yeah,
dancer.
Yeah, he looks like a Chippendales dancer, and Farley is obviously not.
But
he does have moves. I will give him that.
Yeah, and at the end, the committee say, like, well, your dancing was great, but your body is just incredibly, incredibly gross.
And it's like, everybody's
we're
like,
not picking you for that reason. And then Swayze's character of Adrian, you said?
Yes.
He gives a little speech, and he's like, but when it comes to the dance moves and the heart, this guy's got it all over me. and it's very funny. It's like physical comedy.
Yeah,
but
physical, very visual. But
you see Farley's butt crack at one point.
You see butt crack.
I don't know if that was intentional or if that just happened.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, it's a great sketch. It's an iconic sketch. Whenever they play like best of SNL, that's one of the sketches
that's
always
at least
there.
In the montage.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Let's see what
very, very funny.
What else do I got here? One of my favorites. Let's go. Oh, you know, I mentioned this earlier. The one with Phil Hartman, the Sinatra group.
Oh,
one
yeah?
Yeah, it's a sketch. I don't think they really show that much, but I don't know. I, when I watched it, I remember it was one of the funniest sketches I saw back then.
Yeah, sort of a takeoff of the McLaughlin group.
Yeah, McLaughlin group. And
with Sinatra as the head guy.
Yeah, of course.
Going through the topics of the day. But there are topics that are approached in a very Frank Sinatra sort of way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was one I can't say. Like, Milli Vanilli, what is this crap?
Blankety crap. Yeah.
And then I just love the fact that Jan Hooks is there, addressed as Sinead O'Connor, but he always says calls her something else, like Sinbad O'Connor.
Yeah.
Uncle Fester.
I look at you, I think eight ball in the side pocket. And you have
and then you get Sting is Billy Idol,
mm-hmm. sneering up a storm.
Yes, just
Sting is very, very funny in that sketch.
All sneer,
it just curling up his lip and he looks a fair amount like Billy Idol. He's got the wig, he's got the he's having a ball.
Yeah, Chris Rock as Uncle Luke, Two Live Crew, Luke Campbell,
mm-hmm.
and then there was this one part where I think. Chris Rock was like, oh, I don't care about... They're talking about women, and mm-hmm. then Luke says, I don't care about women, I just more care about the butt.
They were talking about Sinead O'Connor.
He's
like, I don't care about the head, I just about the butt.
And then he says, I hear you, Junior, loud and clear.
Put a bag over it and do your business.
And I'm willing to... That is a horrible thing to say, but again, a 12-year-old Darren thought that was hilarious at the time. I was like, that is... Oh my God.
And you can easily imagine Frank Sinatra saying.
Yes, you can. And I will be donating to Planned Parenthood after saying what I just said.
And you also had Mike Myers and Victoria Jackson.
Steve Lawrence and Igor May.
Yes, like, Stephen Eady.
Absolutely, just Frank.
Sucking up to Frank. And just.
You can pick up a check once in a while.
Yeah. Just. Phil Hartman doing Frank Sinatra, that's gold right there.
Yeah, and he gets into a fight with Sting. He's like, I got chunks of guys like you in my stool.
Oh, yeah, and the end, it ends up with Billy Idol kicking Steve Lawrence's ass.
Yes, because...
You know, like, he's slapping him back and forth.
Exactly.
And
Because he gets into a fight with Sinatra, and then Sinatra's like, oh, Steve, kick this guy's ass.
Right.
It's like, oh, okay. Yeah.
That's a great one. That could very easily have ended up on my list.
It was one of my favorites.
That's a great one.
What else do you got?
My next one would be one from more or less the same era. This was from mid-80s when Mr. William Shatner hosted.
Ooh, I think I know what this is.
He goes to a Star Trek convention and he tells the attendees to get a life.
Yes.
And this was written, I was reading an article about it earlier today. It was written by Robert Smigel and John Vitti.
Ooh.
One of the all-time classic sketches.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, it's just wonderful. It's just like Shatner just, he's answering these extraordinarily geeky questions at a Star Trek convention.
You can kind of tell that he's probably felt this way once, at least once or twice.
Yeah. Yeah, and he just is like, get a life. I did the show as a lark for a few years, and you've turned it into a colossal waste of time. You know, get out there. Like, you're almost 30. Have you ever kissed a girl? And then you see John Lovitz just bow his head.
That's hilarious.
And like these two 12-year-old boys who are next to him, they look ashamed. And
have you ever kissed a girl? It's like,
And the fans are hysterically missing the point. Dana Carvey's like, are you saying we should pay more attention to the movies? And no, that's not what I'm saying at all. And you see Phil Hartman, who's like the guy running the convention, he pulls Shatner off the stage and the two of them get into a shoving match. And then a sheepish Shatner comes back and he's like, well, that was, of course, my recreation of the evil Captain Kirk from The Enemy Within.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this convention's going ahead. Warp Factor 9.
That hit hard. That hit close to home for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it shows the excesses of fandom. And, yeah. I mean, it's so easy to, like, lose yourself and lose all perspective.
Very much so.
And you know that somebody... like William Shatner, he's had to put up with his share
Absolutely.
Of stuff like that.
Oh,
and so
God.
I'm sure that was some cathartic for him.
Came from a real place.
And Shatner is a very good light comedian. He's great in sketch comedy. That whole episode actually is one of my all-time favorite episodes.
Oh, wow.
Of SNL. I think that's a very solid.
I got to rewatch that
and
episode.
That had another great Star Trek parody where they're doing the restaurant Enterprise, and it's a revolving restaurant, and Dana Carvey's con comes on with a health inspector to fix.
You mentioned that earlier.
That's a great one too.
Oh, wow. I gotta watch that one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. So I'll wrap it up with this one. We have a couple
honorable mentions.
But I'll finish up with this one. This is like more of a newer one. Nice. It's the one where Tina Fey and Amy Poehler hosted together a sketch called, it was a game show sketch called Meet Your Second Wife.
Oh, that one was brilliant.
Wasn't it?
I love that one. I love that one so much.
It's one of those sketches like where like when you first start it, you don't know what's it about, Meet Your Second Wife. But then as it slowly comes into play what they're doing, and you get like more and more horrified.
And it's kind of like what we were saying before with the Eddie Murphy sketch where it's funny as hell, but it has a point to
make. Yeah, very much so.
And it's because it's like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, it's making a point about like sexism or double standards in our society.
Yeah, or just guys just marrying younger women as they get. Like basically, if you haven't seen it, the premise of the sketch is Tina Fey and Amy Poehler play hosts of this game show where it has three men. And they're basically introducing each man to all the men are married already, and their wives are in the audience. And then they bring on their second wife. And at first, the second wife is like somebody who's
his daughter's college friend.
Yeah, exactly. Like the second wife of the first guy is like somebody who's like 13. And he's like, wait, what is this? She's not your wife now, but in 20 years, once you're a book that you're writing takes off, she will be.
Yeah.
And then the second wife is, I remember like when seeing this sketch, like the audience was like kind of horrified, but like the second guy's second wife was like an 8-year-old girl and everybody was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hilarious sketch, and it is making a point about how guys date, you know, marry younger women once they get older.
There was one where they had like I think a high school or a college age girl come out.
Right, that's the last one.
And he was like, "Oh, well, that's not so bad." And it's like, "Oh no, she's going to get pregnant, and that's going to be your second
your
wife."
Second
and it's like,
wife.
"Oh my fucking god!" And he's like, "Well, I'm sure I'll marry her in like 20 years." And they're like, "No, 16."
It's such a good sketch. It's like, again, it's like they're making a point, but it's funny first, and
yeah.
The fact that it's funny first drives home the point.
That is a classic. I don't believe I'd forgotten that one. That one blew me away when I first saw that.
I mean, my God. It was like one of those sketches where I had to go back and rewatch it because I loved it so much.
And also, like you have like you said, the wives in the audience, and their reactions are great too. Like, because some are very confused.
Right.
Like, I think A.D. Bryant's was like, I thought we were going to win a cruise or something.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, I thought this was like a home makeover.
Right.
Home makeover show. And in a way it is.
I think they revealed that, like, she's going to die in a cruise, and then they end up winning a cruise. Yeah. She's like, I know I shouldn't, but I just love cruises. And
it's a free cruise.
And Leslie Jones is in the audience. I guess it was Kenan Thompson's wife.
Yeah.
And
it's like he would
they
dead,
just
man.
Cut to her, and she's just like...
Just scowling.
Yeah. Which...
Oh, God. But yeah, that sketch is...
That's a great one.
Wow. Like, that sketch just blew me away. I was like,
That's a great one.
Like, that's one of the reasons why I think Tina Fey is one of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it had a bite to it.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I remember, like, I think some, like, afterwards, some guys were upset with it. It's like, oh, you're saying guys are, like, pedophiles or something like that. It's like, no, it's, if you're just butthurt or you're just upset over something. Like, they're not talking to you specifically. They're making a point about how older dudes marry women half their age once they get to a certain age.
They get the trophy wives.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not, they're not wrong. Hollywood's full of stuff like that. Like, guys in their 50s marrying 20-year-olds. So.
I mean, yeah, it's at the point where you see like you see a celebrity or something, and you're like, oh well, they're with somebody who's age appropriate for them, or they're with the same person they've been with for like 30 years.
Yeah, exactly. You don't,
and
see
that's
that.
The exception rather than the rule.
Exactly, and the fact that that's the exception is that's weird, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
they're just shedding some light on something like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So you want to round it off with your
final let's see.
One?
We had some honorable mentions. Let's see. This was one that we brought up when we were going through a Rolling Stone list of the best sketches.
Yes.
I think, just looking for ideas, and I didn't know this one by this title, but it's Sincere Guy Stew.
Yes,
this is a sketch from like the mid-80s where Joe Montana was hosting.
Yeah,
and you've got Phil Hartman and Jan Hooks. They're on a date, and. It's at the end of the date. It's at that point where we're determining
like,
if she's staying over.
It's going to happen.
And we hear the character's inner thoughts.
Yes.
And Phil Hartman's like, well, I'm really glad you came over tonight. And then it cuts to
what
hear
he's
his
thinking.
Thought. Gee, I want to jump her bones. And then she's like, well, I had a really great time. And then she's like, gee, I wish he would jump my bones. And then Joe Montana comes home as
he's a roommate.
Yeah, as Phil Hartman's roommate, Stu.
Yeah.
And the joke is that Stu is utterly sincere in everything he says. He's right. Like, I'm very glad to meet you. And then it cuts to close with him. I'm very glad to meet them.
His inner thoughts is exactly what he's saying.
And he's so clueless. He's not picking up on the subtle signals that Phil Hartman's trying to put out. And he's like, oh, well, she didn't want to drive back, so she could stay over here. I was telling her she could stay in your room, or she could just bunk in with me. And he's like, come on, pick up the signal. And he's like, oh, no, you can stay in my room. That doesn't bother me a bit.
And then he says, that doesn't bother me.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me a bit. And then the great gag at the end, they're like, oh, well, we hope we don't make any noise that'll bother you. And he's like, oh, it won't bother me at all. I'll be upstairs masturbating. And then they cut to close up. I'll be upstairs masturbating.
It was hilarious. I mean, I was a little iffy on it when I saw it when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Because just usually when they have like a guest host who's an athlete,
yeah,
it 9 times out of 10 it'll go, it's not great.
Well, yeah, because they're not actors.
No, they are not.
I mean, it's very rare that you have somebody from the sports world who actually has comedic chops like Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne, yeah.
For instance.
Well, he's the Rock. I mean, my God, man's perfect.
Well, yeah, and there's acting involved in the wrestling world. But I think that was one where they really used like the stiffness of an athlete to their advantage.
Yeah, I just wish they'd do that more.
Yeah, it was just very deadpan, and it was all the funnier because it was deadpan.
I'll be upstairs masturbating.
I always had fond memories of that sketch.
It's a great sketch.
It's cracked me up.
Absolutely. All right, so another honorable mention I'll say is one of my personal favorite. The Gap Girls. The girls was Chris Farley, Adam Sandler, and Spade. When they're in like a, mm-hmm. they all dress up as women and they're in the mall.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, there's not much to it, but it's more their chemistry and the way they're acting, and it's mm-hmm. that I like a lot. Like when Chris Farley is like, oh, diet starts Monday, and just eats David Spade's fries. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I thought you were going to die. And she's like, lay off me, I'm starving.
Yeah,
he just breaks in that deep voice.
That was a funny turn.
Yeah, and then there's a part where like Sandler has his moment where he's like, oh, listen. Because I think Spade's talking about his kind of abusive boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And then Sandler's like, listen to yourself, Kathy. You're my best friend. Like they all have their like little moment in that mm-hmm. sketch that I really dug when I was a kid. It's one of my favorite sketches. I like it.
That was not a favorite of mine, but it did have like some moments.
Controversial.
Like the lay off me, I'm starving.
Yeah, maybe it's like him saying lay off me, I'm starving.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I generally wasn't as big on Adam Sandler and Spade. And,
all right, I'll give you that.
And those guys, but they have, I can see the appeal.
Yeah, they have their moments. They have their little moments.
Yeah.
Do you want to do another? All right, I got a few more honorable mentions, and then
why don't you do another one, and then I got like one more.
Okay, another one. Actually, now that I think about it, this one probably should have made my top five. It was a recent one again, another game show.
Mm-hmm.
Black Jeopardy.
Oh,
the
yes.
one with Tom Hanks. Because when you have a message, you make the funny first, the message comes stronger. For mm-hmm. those who don't know, it's basically like it's a Black Jeopardy where it's Kenan Thompson's the host, and then they have, I think they had, this is like back when
Shazier Zameda and Leslie Jones.
And Tom Hanks. And Tom Hanks is like a Trump supporter.
Yeah, he's wearing a MAGA hat.
Exactly.
He says like get her done at one point.
Exactly. And you think it's going to go one way, but then it kind of mm-hmm. goes another.
They discover they have more common ground than they thought.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really interesting take on it where... Mm-hmm. There was like one of the questions was what can fat girls what can skinny girls do for you?
Not a goddamn thing.
And then everybody was like, yeah, all right, Doug, yeah.
Yeah, they're all right, yeah.
And it's like weird what's it called? They had a joke about one of the questions was something about like iPhones, mm-hmm. and then Doug answered and was like, oh no, don't put your fingerprints in there. That's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
And Kenan was like, you know what? Yeah, that's true. That is how they get you.
And I like there was a great moment where. Kenan is like, you're all right, Doug. And he comes over to shake his hand, and Tom Hanks's Doug instinctively backs away.
Yeah.
Because there's a black man coming for him.
I wonder if Tom Hanks did that, if that was written in or
I read that was an improv. I don't know if they improved it during the live show or during like the dress,
uh-huh.
but Yeah, but like Hanks apparently improv that, and Keenan just rolled with it, and he's like, "No, no, no, it's good, it's good."
Oh, Hanks!
He just puts him at ease, and
see, I like that. That like, oh yeah, did he improv that? Or
yeah, and there's of course that great moment at the end where they go to final. Do you want to?
At the end, I think it was the final Jeopardy question was like, "What, Blue Lives Matter?"
Oh, it was Lives That Matter.
Lives That Matter. Yeah. And then they were like, "All right, well, this is
you had a good run, Doug.
It was nice while it lasted, Doug." But I liked that they were making a point about how, you know, I mean, of course, you know, this country is extremely divided these days, but like there are a few points where we kind of see
there's some common ground.
There is some common ground, and maybe we can try to come together instead of
exactly.
I thought it was a fantastic sketch.
It's funny because I last night as we recorded this, they reran for the 10 o'clock. Episode. They reran an episode from a couple Halloweens ago.
Ooh,
with Tom Hanks hosting
it. David S. Pumpkin?
Yeah. It was the same one with the David S. Pumpkin sketch.
Yeah, that sketch.
And everybody loves it. But the Black Jeopardy sketch incredible.
It's just a really smart sketch, really just well done and well executed. And I like those sketches where you think you see where it's going and it doesn't go that way.
Yeah.
And it actually goes a smarter way that you didn't even think about.
Yeah, it had a very clever turn, that sketch.
Yeah, I was like, all right. Like when you impress me like that.
Because
it
would have been easy to have, like, you know, the stereotypical redneck guy going against the black people. I mean, that's like low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, very much so.
And they went, like, a different, smarter direction with it.
And it worked out. It worked so much well. Mm-hmm. So much well?
So much well.
I'm breaking
there was
down.
So much well in that sketch.
It good, very much so.
Yes. Me likey. I had one more honorable mention. This was the first Debbie Downer sketch where they're at Disneyland and Rachel Dratch is just uttering all these depressing facts.
Is that the one where like everybody breaks?
Everybody breaks. So Lindsay Lohan was hosting and you had Jimmy Fallon and Horatio Sanz in there. So of course you're going to break.
They're going to break.
There's... And
I mean, there was a time when they were like almost breaking almost every sketch.
Yeah.
They were just giggles.
There was, well, I mean, on the 40th anniversary, they did that song about breaking. Adam Sandler and Annie Samberg did a song about, like, that's when you break. And at one point, they're like, here's one with Fallon and Sands. Here's another with Fallon and Sands. And now one more with Fallon and Sands. Just. Those two amused each other.
They're an amusing duo.
And you have Rachel Dratch just giving the depressing facts, and they do the little sad trombone. and she's like, well, it's official. I can't have children. And you see Rachel Dratch just barely holding it together.
Yeah.
And she's trying just to break when the camera's off her, but she's not quite making it.
I thought she broke towards the end, didn't she?
And it makes it all the funnier, honestly.
Yeah.
It somehow enhanced the sketch, even though it wasn't going the way it was supposed to go.
That's true.
But it can be amusing when you see the material actually
very much
getting to the actors.
I thought it was, wow. Yeah, that was a great sketch.
So that's a notable sketch.
Okay. All right, one last one. All right. I had a couple, but I mean, now I look at it, I'm like, I don't know. I remember liking the Toontz's Driving Cat, but now I'm looking at it, like, I don't know. But all right, I'll again. All right, one more I'll say. Melissa McCarthy, which plays Sean Spicer. I thought that was.
She threw herself into that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sketch where, like, literally, like, she. Like, after watching that sketch, everybody was like, why hasn't she been, like, a cast member on this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, why hasn't she been on this sooner? Just, like, because, like, her dressing up as a guy and just being this, you know, bombastic, over-the-top Sean Spicer character, just over-the-top. I mean, my God, she was...
Yeah.
Oof. Oof.
Yeah, you were almost sorry when Sean Spicer left the press secretary job.
Almost.
Because it meant that you wouldn't get any more Melissa McCarthy as Sean Spicer.
No more spicy. Well,
you know, but...
But, yeah, I think it's for the best.
But,
I mean, like, that's what she was in. Unlike the one point where... She just, like, picks up her podium and drives it into the...
And they actually have footage of her driving her motorized podium outside the street.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, that was pretty incredible.
It was good, but I mean, I liked the funny... Because, like, I didn't expect that to happen, where she, like one of the reporters just asks a question, and, like, she... Spicer gets so upset. It's like, you know what? He just picked up her podium and just kind of rammed it into the audience. Yes. And everybody's like, oh, God! It was so unexpected. No one expected anybody to do that, but, like... I don't know. I thought that was a fantastic sketch.
Yeah, that was great.
And that's all I got.
So yeah, that's a good collection of sketches.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
And I got a nice spread through the years.
Yeah. A nice even spread.
Yes.
A nice like sweet peanut butter. Guys, I'm so sorry. I haven't eaten yet. I'm a little hungry.
All right, Darren's blood sugar is dipping down. So oh, God. We're going to wrap this up.
So hungry.
So, but we will be back next week for November 4th with Jonah Hill hosting and Maggie.
We forgot her name already.
I forgot her name. It's Maggie Rogers. Maggie Rogers.
We're big fans.
We're looking forward to hearing what the heck her music is like because we really have no idea.
I wait with bated breath
yes.
to hear who Maggie Rogers is.
Yeah. You know, we could Google it, but yeah, no, let's be real.
That ruins just a prize.
We're not going to Google it.
We want it to be like a present on Christmas Day.
We're coming to it fresh.
Yeah,
we're
hot coming and fresh.
So you can get our hot takes. Hot takes next week.
Yeah.
So.
All right, so where can the people find you, good sir?
I am on Twitter at God, I've got my own Twitter
handle
for a second.
Wow.
At Trumbull Comic. So, yeah, please befriend or follow me on there and tell me what you think of this stuff. Tell us how wrong we are.
Yeah, please do. And, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Yeah, so.
And that's all we got, people. And
that's right. It's been fun, guys. Thanks for listening. Again, we will see you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Howdy, folks. This is Frank from non-productive.com interrupting your podcast feed for this urgent message. We're putting on our first Kickstarter, and we need your help to reach our goal.
And beyond!
NonPro is planning a movie night, a movie marathon where we're streaming some of the best of the worst flicks of all time, and we're raising money to cover operating expenses for the year. Every dollar you donate gets us closer to some truly, truly terrible films, and we're going to stream the entire experiment for you, our loyal fans and supporters. Oh, and hey, we're also donating some cash to the ACLU, because protecting our right to speak out is sort of important, don't you think? And if you support our Kickstarter, there are some awesome rewards in it for you, including watching some ridiculously amazing films with us in studio. To donate, please head over to non-productive.com/movie night and show us your support. Thanks.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.